Hello and welcome to Front and Nationwide. This is the Athletics dedicated Blue Jackets podcast. Aaron Portzine with you on a Thursday afternoon. We got Blue Jackets, the last place team in the league, against the Boston Bruins, the first place team in the league. This could be an interesting night in TD Bank North, whatever the hell it's called now, the Garden. Blue Jackets, a 6-2 loss to the Rangers on Tuesday. They have but 9 games left in the season. That is probably a good thing. I think we can all agree on that. The Blue Jackets, I mean, we wrote a story the other day that detailed how different this team looks right now compared to what they thought they were going to look like when the season started. Just mapping it out is wild. You realize how much it has changed. In case you didn't notice it as you were moving along, just the scope of it is incredible. And of course, it's continuing to evolve, maybe devolve. News today, the Blue Jackets have recalled Marcus Bjork. That is an emergency recall that tells you that something's not right. They've got a couple of guys in the room who did not skate today. Jay Christensen, Adam Boakvist, both did not take the morning skate. They are ill. I guess there are other players ill, fighting through some stuff. And of course, this is a team that in recent days has lost Laine, has lost Merzlikins, has lost Gudbranson, Blankenberg. My God, who's left? They're trying to do the right thing by Cleveland too. Their minor league team in the American Hockey League, but you gotta ice a team here. And so they're taking away from the Monsters to patch up the Blue Jackets. It's not an easy juggling act. We can talk about that. We can talk about whatever you want to talk about. I also want to know, and it struck me watching the Blue Jackets play in New York, wrote this after the game. Marchenko scored, Gaudreau scored. It's been a dreadful season. There's no getting around that. It can't end soon enough, as I've already said. And yet I think you're fooling yourself if you look at this roster and see nothing but a lost cause. I think the Blue Jackets have had years like that before where you look around and go, you know, what are you banking on here? What's the hope for the future from this group? I don't feel that way about this group at all. I think Gaudreau has quietly had a pretty good season. He's coming up on 70 points. Not many people have done that in a Blue Jacket sweater. Now, he's not going to match the 115 he hung last year for Calgary. I don't think anybody expected him to. But he's having a pretty good season, especially when you consider who all he's played with and who he hasn't played with. He basically has not been on the ice with Zach Werenski, who is a major generator of offense for this team. Think how he could boost things. Kirill Marchenko has had a really impressive season, 20 goals in 52 games. That, of course, ties Pierre-Luc Dubois' rookie record. He looks like a player. And he's doing it, and he's only going to get better, you would assume. He's going to get stronger. He's going to figure things out in this league. Kent Johnson, I think, has probably received too little national attention for the rookie season that he's had. He's right there with a lot of the top rookies in this league. Is he a wing? Is he a center? I don't know. He's a hell of a player. And you have to think he's going to get better and as he gets stronger as well. They're going to add a heck of a piece in this year's entry draft. Obviously, that's what this season is kind of about now. So just if you get some time and you want to dream a little dream, start jotting the names down and organizing them. If it's Bedard, if it's Fantilli or Carlson, however you want to do it, stick them in the middle. Put Jenner in there, maybe for another year in the middle. Put Sillinger in there, probably a third-line guy next year. And then start putting Laine and Johnson and Marchenko along the wings. They've got the makings of a pretty good team here. I don't think they're that far away as many would. We'll see how it goes. So many things have to go right, of course. We've seen how things can fall apart this season. But we can talk about all that. I'm interested to get your thoughts. We did not do this last week. We did the mailbag instead. It seemed like a nice break. A lot of people like the mailbag approach as well. So they were pleased last week. We got to, I think, 25, 30 questions there. And we'll spend about 45 minutes here chatting with you today. So if you've got a question, you can step up to the stage. I see you've got somebody on stage already. You can also add your question via the text feature in this live room, and we'll try to get to as many as we can. Let's go first to the stage. We've got Brian P. with us. Brian, Brian from Nationwide. Go ahead.
Hey, greetings, Aaron. Thanks for everything that you do for the community, the club, and all of that. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Of course.
Absolutely. I'll admit, you know, with the season and two young ones, this is not most tuned in I've ever been to the team. So,
Yeah, exactly.
So I just kind of wanted to touch on Brad Larson. You know, I do respect the man. I do think he's got a great head on his shoulders. He appreciates everything that, you know, no matter if it's an entry-level guy or a veteran, I think he's doing a good job with not a full deck. On the other flip coin, you know, there's a lot going on for next season to prepare for as well, too. I do believe that Brad's the guy to lead us there. But, you know, it's just so unfortunate without a full squad to really see the potential that is there. Just kind of seeing what your thoughts may be. I'm not ready to ask the guy by any stretch, but what changes do you potentially see? Potential, you know, new assistant coaches or, you know, just kind of that. I really struggle with writing off Brad Larson with what he's had to work with this year.
Yeah, well, this is the question that management has to weigh, right? I mean, they can point to the injuries, and it's fair. The injuries have gutted them. How much of it is that, and how much do they need a different voice? I think the other thing that has to be considered is, what are they getting out of the lottery? What are they doing this year? What kind of team are they going to have next year? I think you can rightly say 2 years ago, when they were in a much different spot that they're going to be this coming summer, this next season, that Brad Larson made some sense for where they were at. They were in teaching mode. I'm not sure that they're still going to be in teaching mode next year. Now, that doesn't mean get rid of Brad Larson and clean house, but I think it's something that management has to consider. What's the makeup of this team? What is it going to look like? And what kind of coach does this team need? And those are that has to be considered. And so, I mean, I don't think they're looking at this season and saying it's. I know they're not looking at this season and saying it's gone south because we have a coach that is not up to NHL standards. I don't think they feel that at all. And it would feel more than a little unfair, frankly, if they do fire Brad Larson in a season like this where they've got 500 plus man games. Certainly he bears no responsibility for the injuries whatsoever. I don't think anybody can say what this team would have been like if they were injured or if they were not injured. But management has to consider who is the best coach for what this team is going to be like next year. And that may or may not be Brad Larson. I can't step into their, A, the future to see what it's going to look like, but B, what their thinking is. They really, really like Brad Larson. He's been in the organization for more than a decade now. I mean, all the way back to Springfield when Ken Hitchcock was the coach here. That's how long he's been in the organization. So it's not an easy decision for them, and I don't think it'll be made flippantly. But I think after a season like this where you've been dead last in the league more days than you haven't been, I think everything has to be reconsidered. And again, a different team needs a different kind of coach. Is he still the right guy for that job? And I think that's something that they're going to have to, they're probably already weighing. I mean, they see where this is going. They know when the season ends. I don't think it's going to be something that they just start thinking about on April 15th when the season's over, but it'll be interesting to see what decision they come up with.
Thank you so much, Aaron. Sorry, everybody, for leaving my mic on. My bad on that. The first time requester. But yeah, with that being said, you're right. There's so many things that can change between now and next year. You got to look at what next year can apply. And yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Thanks, Aaron. Yeah.
All right, Brian. Thank you.
All right, Brian. Thank you.
Paul. And let's go to, we've got Chad T. Chad, you are now on Front and Nationwide. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yep, we got you. What's going on, man?
Okay. Everything's going okay. So I guess my question is that, you know, considering the fact that, you know, Jordan Dumois is having such a good year in the QMHL or the, you know, Quebec Junior Hockey League.
Yeah.
You know, what do you see their plan being with him? Because I just can't see him going back to juniors after this year. I know he can't go to the AHL, but it almost kind of seems like there's just no way that he can possibly get anything out of going back to juniors. What do you think about that?
Well, I think you're right. I also think they don't have much of a choice. He is signed by the Blue Jackets. He's got an entry-level deal. So the only place they can assign him is to his junior club. They cannot work a deal that gets him to Europe. He's not free to go to Europe. It's either the NHL or the Quebec League. And I would, at this date, if you had to predict, I don't see him being an NHL guy next year. I think he probably goes back to Halifax and has another 150-point season. And I'm not sure what he gets out of that. It's not a great thing for his development. It's not the worst thing ever. I could also see this. I could see them keeping him here to start the season, letting him get a taste of the NHL, and then sending him back to the Q, knowing that that's where he has to go. But this is one of those players that it's a frustrating thing for NHL teams, because he's sort of moved beyond the major junior level, especially Quebec, the weakest of the three. I think they'd probably feel a little bit better if he was in the OHL or the WHL. But he's back to the Q almost certainly next year, and it just is what it is. Cole Sillinger would have been in this situation if he hadn't been drafted out of the USHL. That's what allowed them to send him to Columbus. And you've got, I believe it's Matejchuk, who is, I don't think anyone thinks he's quite ready for the NHL either, but he's probably going back to junior as well. Now, his numbers aren't as gaudy as Jordan Dumais, but he's a defenseman, so they're not going to be. When you draft high, as the Blue Jackets have the last couple of years, you run into this. I don't think it's the end of the world. Maybe Dumais can find some way to improve upon things in another year at the Q, but it's safe to say he's barely challenged by that league. And you know what? Maybe Halifax can push and do the Memorial Cup. He can also get things out of next season beyond junior. Like, you'd have to assume he was cut by the World Junior Team Canada this year, which I think he was fairly surprised and upset about. Maybe that happens for him this year. You'd certainly think it would. So that's an experience, a new experience for him this year that would be meaningful for sure. But at this point, I think you'd have to expect him to be back in Halifax next year. All right, Chad, thanks for the question. Let's go to some of the chat messages that we have. Scroll through these here. Patrick S. says, my biggest fear is this team goes on a miraculous 8-1 run to end the season, jumps 5-6 spots in the standings, and then falls back even further in the draft lottery. Well, Patrick S., we've made it this far, my man. I can't talk you out of your nerves or your angst. It just is what it is. Essentially, the CBJ getting a pick in the 7-10 range. Patrick says, first question, how irrational am I? Well, I don't know if I'd say you're irrational, because I think there are other people in the same boat as you. Second question, do you think management has a plan in place to put the brakes on any winning streak? Well, I mean, this is a weird thing. Management is not doing everything they can to help this team right now, but I think you can also say that they've done right by this team. There have not been egregious moves that have made it clear that they're tanking. Who did they call up when they needed a forward from Cleveland? They called up Cleveland's best player, one of the best players in the AHL, Fix Wolanski, 67 points this year in the American Hockey League. If this team were truly tanking, they would have called up a guy from Syracuse. Good God, that's two affiliations ago, from Cleveland that could barely play, not the best forward. Who did they call up when they needed defensemen? They've called up Sweezy, and today they've called up Bjork. These are two of the better defensemen with Cleveland this year. So, I mean, Management knows what this is about. Management wants the best pick they can possibly get, but they have not. I think they've followed a respectable set of guidelines for how to honor the NHL and not truly drive this thing into the ground. So full marks for that. And finally, Patrick says, should the nightmare scenario play out, would ownership step in and start to put management on the hot seat or hold them directly accountable for not doing what it takes to get the talent at the top of the draft? No. I mean, they're not going to climb to the 7-10 range, Patrick. If anything, they may get to 3 or 4, which would be bad enough. But I would say rest your nerves. Tonight's going to be a tough one for them. And I think sometimes what you see is you run on fumes, and then the reality of this hits you. They've played pretty hard and pretty well. They've also been outscored 14-4 the last two games. So it is weird. They win 2 in a row, and you go, oh, God, here they go again. Well, they've won like 2 of their last 9. I think it's 2 of their last 11 now. So it's not really a hot streak. They're probably going to win a couple games the rest of the way. But I don't see an 8-1 run, God willing. Chance of Kirill Marchenko winning Rookie of the Year. Not great. I think Matty Beniers is going to get the edge there on total points, certainly. There are other candidates as well. Marchenko got started a little bit late. We're gonna have some Marchenko stories the rest of the way here, and hopefully there'll be some boost to his notoriety around the league. I think people are starting to recognize that he's a hell of a player, but him not getting called up till December may have made it a little bit too late for that to happen. But we'll see. NDJ says, do you think the CBJ will try again to sign Gavrikov in free agency? Do you know what his ask was versus what the CBJ wanted to give, or did he just not want to resign? Well, I don't know if you noticed, but we did a thing shortly, maybe 2 weeks ago, about free agent defensemen who could be on the radar for the Blue Jackets this summer. So we're thinking left side. We're thinking sort of defensive-minded with PK possibilities of penalty kill, not Subban. So Gavrikov fits that description. They're looking for a guy that can replace Gavrikov, but directly. The only way I think that Gavrikov circles back to here is if he finds the market not to his liking. And that is, I would say that's becoming increasingly unlikely given the way that he's played in Los Angeles. He's been really, really good. And we'll see. Maybe the Kings decide to keep him. Maybe he decides to stay with the Kings. I don't think it's completely out of the question, but I would put it on the unlikely side. But I think a defenseman in that mold is who the Blue Jackets would be looking for. Matthew M. says, if you had to choose a prime David Viborni or a prime Bjorkstrand to play for the Jackets for the next 5 years, who would you take? Wow. You know, that's a great question. And I'm looking at the composition of this team. What I suspect the composition of this team would be, both guys would fit. I think with Marchenko, with Laine, you've got some serious shooters. I think with Johansson, with Gaudreau, you've got some serious playmakers. If you add Bedard, dream a little dream, you've got an incredible shooter to go with Marchenko and Laine. You know what? Give me Viborni, because for me, Viborni has playmaking ability more than shooting ability. He can score, of course, but more playmaking and more of an all-around offensive contributor than Bjorkstrand. Taking nothing away from Bjorkstrand. I like the idea of being able to put Viborni in multiple different places, and he could add to a line playmaking-wise, not just with a great shot. But I take either of those guys in their prime. Yes.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Mark R. says, how to stay at the bottom or top of the draft? Well, yeah, I guess it depends on how you want to look at it. I think they're doing the right thing, my man. They're in last place right now. 9 games to go. Patrick S. says, why can't the CBJ mostly be an ECHL lineup the rest of the way? Well, now you got to be respectable, Patrick. I mean, you don't want the rest of the league hating you forever. And that's kind of bullshit if they do that. So I think they're doing the look. This team is gutted right now. I mean, absolutely gutted. Peterson's on the second line, right? I think the top defensive pair was Bernie and Peake the other night. Come on. I mean, it's a half AHL team, maybe 2/3. Christopher A says, Aaron, you've said that of course the Jackets will review Brad Larson's status after the season. If they decide to move on, what coaches are out there that you could see as a potential replacement? Do you think it would be an older, more established coach? Or are there up-and-coming coaching candidates out there that they might go with? It's a great question. It's interesting to me. These things always go back and forth, right? You go from Tortorella to a player's coach in Larson. Chances are the next one's going to go from Larson to a coach that you consider maybe not to be a quote-unquote player's coach. Although, in today's game, almost everybody has to be some measure of player's coach. It depends on where they want to go with this. It depends on what the team looks like and what they feel like it needs. And that the first determination of that is, do they move on for Larson? And I'm not sure that they do. So if they move on from Larson, I don't think they would hire a coach with a similar resume or similar personality as him. So maybe it would be an older, more established coach. Bruce Boudreau is out there. Wouldn't that be something? Tony A says, is Jarmo on the hot seat due to the team's lack of performance? And was Brad Larson the right choice? Was Gerard Gallant considered? I mean, I don't know about hot seat. I don't get that sense. I think an NHL GM is always sort of on the hot seat, that when the team does not perform and there aren't explanations for why that is, then the seat gets very warm very quickly. Was Brad Larson the right choice? Again, I think most people last season were quite pleased with the way that this team played. And it would take somebody smarter than I to sift through the injuries and the rubble this year to decide which was a coaching failing and what was the team just not being the team that you anticipated. Gallant was absolutely considered. I think Gallant wanted the job. I think Gallant would have rather been here than New York, believe it or not. He'd love to have come back here. He still has friends in this city. He was interviewed. He was considered. Larson got the job. Ronald K says, Porty, what is the draft strategy? Should we fall to the 4th pick in the draft? Boy, you guys are fatalists, aren't you? Move down, package both number ones. Thanks for the positive outlook. At dismal season, we do have some really good pieces. Well, where they're at right now, they can only fall to 3. Good news. But should they end up at 4th, that puts them out of the Bedard, Fantilli, Carlson sweepstakes and gives them a tough decision. Do they go Michkov? Do they go elsewhere? There could be some, as you note, there could be some interest in that 4th pick if you're not looking to draft Michkov. I don't think they would draft Michkov. So it's something to consider. I think it's also a worst-case scenario. I think if they held on to the 4th pick, I think Will Smith is a player they would consider for, perhaps even over Michkov. Again, let's hope it doesn't come to that. Christopher A. says, Cincinnati Reds, 64.5 wins. Are you taking the over or the under? I just had a conversation with a former Blue Jackets general manager, who's a big Reds fan. He would take the over on that. I predicted 63-99, so I will take the under. And how sad is it that it's opening day, and doesn't it feel like you could already put an asterisk next to the Reds' name as eliminated from the playoffs? Anyways, I digress. This is all Blue Jackets all the time. Scott C. says, how concerned are the Blue Jackets with Elvis's regression year over year, his injuries, and all of the Tarasov injuries? Goaltending seems to be on very shaky ground with nothing really in the pipeline. Well, Scott, they should be worried, I think. I think they still believe that Tarasov can be a really good goalie. I think they still believe that Elvis has all of the things inside of him that you would want from your number one. But it is concerning and should be concerning that it hasn't come together yet for Elvis. Hasn't really truly come together yet. There's so many things you need from a number one goaltender. It's not that different sometimes from a quarterback in an NFL team. You need stability, predictability, consistency of performance. You need just a guy that is the bedrock foundation of the team, especially a young team. And I thought Elvis would be further along right now, just being honest with you. I thought Elvis was going to take the city and the league by storm, and he has not done that. And I think it's only right that people are quite concerned right now. He's got to deliver. He's not young anymore either. That's the other thing here. He's not been here very long. But he got here at a very mature age. I want to say he's 28, turning 29 next month. This is not a 22-year-old player who's still sorting out NHL consistencies. This is a player who should be there. The flip side, and what paints all of this, of course, is that Elvis has been through a god-awful lot of experiences that nobody should ever have to go through. And I think there's a required level of sympathy and empathy with that as well. I don't even want to go down the road of predicting or guessing how much of this is carryover from any of that stuff. Does he need a new goalie coach? Does he need a change of scenery? It might be the thing that he needs more than anything. I don't know. But what's going on now, both with his inconsistencies in playing and his unavailability in being able to play, it just doesn't cut it as a number one goalie. You'll be reading more about that in the coming days as well. We've got Alex L. on the line. Alex L., you are on stage with the Front and Nationwide podcast. Go ahead, sir.
Excellent. Thanks for having me. To kind of piggyback off the goalie talk, I don't think they can honestly say they're confident with the two goalies they have. Maybe I'm just kind of getting too ahead of myself. I mean, what do you see happening? Obviously, Tarasov can't be sent down. What do you see happening? Do they just roll with the two of them next year and hope for the best? Or do you see maybe a trade in the works? I mean, What's your sense and what the possibilities are? And then second question, I know we have some extra cap space from this year, I believe. Does that roll over to next year or how does that work?
Yeah, so quick on the cap space, it does not roll over. You don't accumulate it. Every year there's a cap. Every year you have a number to be under the cap. So they don't get a credit for 1 year to the next. As for the goalie, I mean, I'm just thinking as to what I would, which seems prudent to me. And I think you have to go with Merzlikins and Tarasov. I can't imagine there's a trade market for Merzlikins given how he's played. Unless you want to get out from underneath it and you're willing to take a bad contract to move a bad contract and you're ready to go there already. But I just don't know if that's feasible. What makes sense to me, and you see it every year, you see a team invest heavily, some teams invest heavily in their top AHL and their number three NHL goaltender. That would seem to be absolutely imperative, I think, for Columbus. And I don't know who that player is, see how the market settles this year, but having a player start the season in Cleveland, sign like, who was it they had a couple of years ago, a veteran player in Cleveland, and ended up playing more games in Columbus than you would
expected. And if it gets to a point where Elvis is having another season like this, then you may need to put him on waivers and send him to Cleveland and bring that player up to play. Not ideal, but I think this is kind of where they're at, where I don't think you give up on Elvis at this juncture, but I do think you take some steps. Again, you have to consider a new goalie coach. You have to consider a new coach. You also have to consider how much better Elvis might be if the team in front of him were more competent, especially early in the season, where you can get some sort of base of reliability and consistency. He has not been good enough. The play in front of him has not been nearly good enough, especially early in the season. If you watch some of those early season games, my God, it was just incredible, the pressure that their goaltenders were under. So all of it works together. I would not give up on Elvis 1 year into a 5-year contract, and I don't think they're poised to do that either. So I think you got to run it back with Merzlikins and Tarasov, but I want to buy insurance as best as I can at the AHL level and see how the goalie market plays out this summer. See if you can find someone. I got to tell you, if there's a person who doesn't have a job when the musical chairs stop, I think you could do give them a real good sales pitch to come to Cleveland/Columbus and look at the opportunity that could be in front of him, right? I mean, nobody wants to look at it this way. There's a reason Hunter McCown looked at Columbus and said, I'll go there. One of them was opportunity. I'll go there. Look at that team down the middle. Hello. I think I can get a job there. You don't go someplace where you're going to be parked in the American Hockey League. And I think you could really pitch that to an NHL number 3 goalie. Pretty good opportunity here. Pretty reasonable chance that you're going to get some playing time in the NHL, if not a lot of playing time in the NHL. So those are my thoughts on how to sort of buffer yourself against that. Going back to the stage, we've got a lineup now. Alex, thanks for that question. I appreciate it. Let's try Andy J. Andy, you with us?
Hey, I was just wondering about like Jack Roslovic. You mentioned in your mailbag last week that the Jackets want it to work, but it just seems like it's not. I don't know. When I watch, it seems like he shows up for maybe 10 out of 82 games a year. Just wondering is there even a trade market? And I remember there was rumors last year that they weren't happy with his work ethic. I don't know if that was just rumors or what, but I had read that somewhere. So I didn't know what your thoughts on what his market value would be.
Yeah, well, I know there's frustration with Roslovic because there's so much offensive talent there. And it shows up so sporadically. I'm not sure what this looks like this summer. Will I be surprised if he's traded? Not in the least. I don't think it's the end of the world if he isn't, but I would be surprised a bit if he's still here. In the fall, I feel like the center ice position here is starting to have some answers, such that trading him now is making more sense for them. And also trading him without a requirement to get a center in return is now possible. If you look at Voronkov coming over, we mentioned McCown, whatever he gives you there is kind of a plus, I would say. He and Corrali, and others sort of, you know, Corrali's the fourth guy here. Hunter McCown probably in a battle for the fifth spot when camp starts, but we'll see. You know, the guy they get in the draft, Jenner, very much still here. Sillinger's going to be with them. So they've started to have some answers down the middle such that they don't need to get a center back in a trade with Roslovic. And we'll see. I don't think the trade deadline was the time to move him because playoff teams aren't looking for a Jack Roslovic. I think other teams may be. But let's see how the summer goes. And it's something to keep an eye on. It would be unfortunate because, you know, Jack is a really interesting guy where he does a lot of really nice things and a lot of good things for people in and around the community and does them all for the right reason. He does not do them for attention, doesn't want the attention. People don't even know about him. He's a very charitable young man. But on ice, I think you can safely say just hasn't been the seamless fit that they would have wanted. And maybe he's better suited on the right wing. He was on the right side for a game and a half or two games when Laine came back. Did pretty well. Maybe giving him a look there makes more sense. All things to consider at some point this summer. Andy, thanks for the question. Pamela W. has got some questions. What is the tiebreaker after regulation wins? The tiebreaker after regulation wins is regulation and overtime wins. So some people, to avoid the confusion, like to say non-shootout wins. And if it's tied after that, then it goes to total wins, including shootouts, including overtime, obviously including regulation. And then if it's still tied, it goes into head-to-head. Pamela W. says, what is the reason for the recent home sellouts? Based on our record, surprised to see we've had sellouts. Are they real sellouts? Well, they are real sellouts, and they are real people in the seats, too. I can tell you that. The reason is number 13, Johnny Gaudreau. And he sold a bunch of tickets this summer. And the tough thing for this team now, depending on how things go, is how to sell tickets for next year when the bloom is a little bit off the rose there. My sense is that they're going pretty well. I think the entry or the lottery is going to determine ticket sales to a large extent too, if you catch my drift. But apparently they have had great crowds and really involved crowds, I have to say. It reminds me of some of the early days teams where the team wasn't very good and the support was still there and really into it and very wise to it, very, very smart about what they were watching. Yeah, it's been great. Chad T says, what are your thoughts on Sposal? He is a teammate of Connor Bedard, has had himself a great season. Where does he fit in with the Blue Jackets possibly next season? So, Chad, you'll be glad to know I'm writing a piece for the lead of the Sunday Gathering this week about the friendship of Sposal and Martin Rysavy. So Sposal plays for Regina. Rysavy plays for Moose Jaw. They're very close friends. They grew up together miles apart in the Czech Republic. And what a wonderful world this is. They now live just 45 minutes apart in Saskatchewan, Canada, which is hilarious to me. They're really good friends. Sposal is one of the few guys that can keep up with Connor Bedard. Bedard loves playing with him. My understanding, and I have to go look at this, I believe Sposal can turn pro. Yes, can turn pro this next year. So he's got to put on some weight. He's got a ton of skill. He obviously can process the game quickly if he can hang with Bedard. But I'm not sure he's NHL next year. Probably AHL next year with some NHL opportunities. We shall see. But he is a guy who has a bright future. And this team, I must note, has a ton of these sort of power play type defensemen coming. And he is one of them. He's got a ton of points for Regina. They begin the playoffs, I believe, tomorrow night against Saskatoon. Moose Jaw is in the playoffs as well. Maybe they'll meet. But yes, Sposal and Rysavy are extremely close. Two Blue Jackets draft picks and guys you may see in Cleveland next year. Philip W. says, Porty, have you gotten the chance to watch Juracek much? I've mostly only seen the stats, but from what I've seen, he looks very confident and aggressive. Is he a lock for the NHL roster next year? Is slotting him on the top pair next year really realistic? And what kind of impact can he have on the blue line? So, Philip, I have seen him play. He is impressive. He still, in my eyes, still has some puppy dog feet where he's growing into his feet and he's at times a little clumsy. When he is straight line skating, he can fly. It's the change of direction sometime. And everybody I talk to, including his coach in Cleveland, Mike Havlin, says
that works itself out as he acclimates to his size and he's still getting bigger. His size and his strength are going to increase. So he is absolutely a top talent. He is for sure going to be in the NHL next year. I'm with you. It seems a reach that a 19-year-old can play on the top pair with Werenski, but we shall see. We may get that opportunity to see it. I think that's what the team is envisioning. Stranger things have happened. Let's see. These are the things you look at next year where you go, next year could have some rough patches too. That's not an easy life, a teenager playing defense in the NHL. There will be some rough patches, but it's also a testament to him and how good he is, because I don't think there would be many rough patches that they would last very long. So there's the outlook there. Samir says, hi, Porty, and greetings from Helsinki. Oh, this is my guy, Samir. Man, it's great seeing you, my man. Great seeing you in Helsinki. What was the name of that place we went to? The little red cottage with the great cinnamon rolls. I can't think of the name of it now. I'll probably think of it before we're over here. Theoretical question. This is from Samir. CBJ and other three baseman teams are within 1 point before the last game against the Sabres. Oh, God, Samir, you're just going to drive people crazy here. CBJ are the only team playing that night. By losing, CBJ would wind up 32nd. By winning, they would wind up 29th. Samir, don't do this. Would management make sure they won't win that game? I really hope that the Sabres game does not have any weight to it anymore. Samir, if they're playing in that game and they have a chance to move up three spots in the standings, I think you'll see John Davidson come out of retirement and play goal. You'll see Jarmo Kekalainen, Ville Sirin, and Basil McRae form the number one forward line. I was going to say Rick Nash and Jared Bull, but those guys might still be able to get it done. I think they're going to dress the alumni in that game just to see how it goes, although they might be an improvement. I'm kidding a little bit. Yeah, that is, Samir, you're, my God, you've laid out a completely angst-ridden scenario for the people. You are forgiven, but don't ever do it again. Chris B says, have you heard anything regarding ownership losing patience with the current state of the team? How's the temperature there? I have not. Ownership here is very, very reserved. It's funny. When a team loses, people get mad at ownership, want them to do more. And when a team is, when an ownership is loud and involved, people want them to butt out. McConnell does not speak. It does not share his feelings in a regular scenario with the people, but he trusts John Davidson and Jarmo Kekalainen implicitly, from what I can understand. Yes. Eric S. says, with the smoke around Kevin Hayes, do you get the sense the front office is going to chalk up the season struggles purely to injury? Well, I don't know what the smoke is around Kevin Hayes. I mean, I've heard it. I just don't think it's true. Yeah, I don't think it's true. I think they would be insane, insane to add 3 years of Kevin Hayes at $7 million. Insane. And I don't think they do that. Jonathan C says, appears a lot of season-ending shoulder injuries this year. Are these common injuries in the NHL? Anything that can be done to prevent these? You know, I'll ask Jarmo about this because it's gone on all season. I mean, you just look at Werenski's injury, and he goes into the wall awkwardly. We talked about it again yesterday. He was so far away from the board that it probably would have been better if he would have just gone face first into the wall. But human tendency, you can't do that, and you're not going to do that. He put his arm up. He tried to catch himself. All of the force that he's skating with, plus his weight, was too much for that shoulder. And I don't think you can lift your way or stretch your way out of that injury. That's just one example. I don't think these guys are getting hurt because they're out of shape. I don't. I think there were years ago, this team had just a rash of groin injuries that never seemed to heal. And I do think they found something with that. If you remember, they went out and hired Nelson Aiyote from the Blues, and Nelson sort of took things over for a while, and those kind of disappeared. Yeah, I mean, I think it's bad luck. I think it's bad luck, and I think a lot of these injuries are bad luck. I mean, I wonder if Line A taking faceoff after faceoff isn't using muscles he's not normally using. If that has anything to do with his triceps, but we'll never know that. Nick B says, any chance of resting any of the veterans for a game or two for health or tanking purposes? Wouldn't mind Gaudreau or Jenner taking a few games off towards the end of the season. I don't see that there are any plans to that. But I wouldn't rule it out either. I could see some guys getting some general soreness that requires them to take a break. Pamela says, I've seen some websites say the 32nd team has an 18.5% chance for the top pick. Others say 25.5. Well, Pamela, it gets a little confusing. Technically, the number one team has an 18.5% chance. Okay. But only, you can only move up 10 spots. So the only teams that can win the lottery are 11, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So that means 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. Those teams that don't make the playoffs, if they were somehow, they can't win the lottery. All they can do is move up 10 spots. So if, say, the 14th place team wins, their ball gets chosen, they move up to 4. Now, Columbus, whoever's first, is the number one pick. Okay? So not only does the worst team get their own percentage, 18.5, they get the cumulative percentage of those teams that can't win it from 12 and below, and that equals 7% among those teams. So put that with the 18.5, and it's 25.5% for the number one team. Hope that doesn't make it even more confusing. Kenny B says, will we see Juracek at all in the NHL down the stretch? The only way I think you might see Juracek down the stretch in the NHL, and time's a bit running out here, is if Cleveland is either eliminated or clinches, and Columbus is still having games to play. Now, Cleveland's in a dogfight, and I don't know if they want to pull him out of the Cleveland lineup for a game in the NHL and send him back again late. They may just want to keep him in Cleveland. He's fine where he is. We can wait to see him. But if they get eliminated, should they lose their next six and be done, then I think you'll definitely see him before the season's up. We've got time for a couple more. Let's go to Jeff G. Jeff, are you there?
Jeff, are you there?
I'm here.
Hey, Jeff, go ahead, man.
Hey, Jeff, go ahead, man.
Hey, thanks for doing this. Real quick question. Upon the news of the Jackets signing Carson Kuhlemans, there was an article in The Athletic about how the Jackets think they have the complete package in Carson Kuhlemans. Mm-hmm. I saw that you tweeted not too long after that. I think you retweeted someone saying that they had no longer had any faith in the Jackets' evaluation of their talents and that they'll believe it when they see it and all this stuff. Is that your belief? Do you think that that's the belief of the fan base? Or I was just trying to figure out you know, what to make of that, I guess.
You're saying I retweeted someone who said they have no faith?
Yes.
I retweeted?
Yes.
I'd have to go back and look. So what they said about Kuhlemans is that the potential is there for him to be an all-around defenseman, and I think they mean it. I don't think anybody thinks he's there yet, or he wouldn't be in the American Hockey League. If he were there yet, he wouldn't have had a second year at Wisconsin. He is an offensively gifted player for sure, and they think he has the potential to be a well-rounded defenseman. He started to show that late in his Wisconsin sophomore season. As for them, I mean, I don't know where people stand on their faith, their ability to evaluate talent. Marchenko's turned out pretty well, quite well, probably better than some anticipated. All we can do is look at a young player, look at his track record, speak to his attributes. No one can really say if he's going to develop or not or display that in the NHL. It's the toughest league in the world. And
the Blue Jackets, of course, are going to love their prospects, are going to talk up their prospects. You got to be realistic. I mean, there were some trade deadline talks by Yarmo a number of years ago about how great Vitaly Abramov was, how great Jonathan Davidson is. That never quite festered, but I don't think he's unique to loving his prospects. I remember Doug McLean years ago saying he wouldn't trade the Blue Jackets roster for the Red Wings roster, and a reporter saying, do you want to say that again? Are you sure you meant to say that? Yes, he said it again. You love your guys, and you see the best in them, the best potential in them. My job certainly is to watch a player play at the NHL level and evaluate it, as you all do as well. But I don't pretend to know at this date how good Kulemans is going to be or not be. But he's obviously a talented player, first-round draft pick. You can see his offensive production at Wisconsin. There's a lot of potential there to like. So you call Chris Clark, the assistant general manager who runs Cleveland. You call Rick Nash, who spent a ton of time around Carson Kulemans, and you ask him about the player, and you quote them. And this is what they said. Now, is it a promise that this guy is going to be a Norris Trophy candidate? It is not. This is what the team thinks of him at the time, and this is where it's at this stage in his career. I think the understanding is that Carson Kulemans has a lot of work to do. But the other side of that is that Carson Kulemans is a damn talented player with size and skill and a ton of potential, who's probably not too far away from being a really good NHL player if he puts the work in. And so that's really all you can say at this point, is to lay it out like that. Does that help, Jeff?
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, we'll take one more call. We'll go to Chad T. Chad, go ahead. You are on Front and Nationwide.
I have two questions. One is the chatter out of Calgary talking about how if they don't make the playoffs this year, that they might have to make significant changes because of salary cap. What were your chances, or what do you think the chances of the Blue Jackets being interested in Lindholm or even Hanifin for that left D spot on our roster? And then the second question is, I don't think people understand how good Justin Danforth was last year and how much of an impact he made, you know, by missing most of this year. As a fourth line guy, and the way that he could score and the way he was showing in training camp, I expect huge impacts from him next year. What do you think about that?
Yeah, so first to Calgary, I'm not sure what their situation is. We hear all the time about how the salary cap is going to force teams to move players that they would otherwise not want to move. I know Jarmo Kekalainen is waiting and ready for something like that to take place. It doesn't always happen. Usually they figure out a way to make it happen so that they can keep the players that they really want to keep. We'll see. I'm not quite up to date on their cap situation. As for Danforth, I will agree with you. Brad Larson will tell you, he's told us a bunch of times that he thinks Danforth's injury had a much larger impact on the Blue Jackets than most would realize. I mean, Danforth is such an underappreciated player in the NHL anyways, because he's fairly new to the league. Last year was the first time he was even in the league. Columbus was a fairly anonymous team last year. He was our Masterton Trophy nominee. I thought he deserved a hell of a lot of consideration, and it just didn't register any interest whatsoever. It just didn't get any traction. He's one of those guys who's worth more to the Blue Jackets than he is to than any other team in this league would even recognize, probably. But I do feel that, yes, you're onto something there, that they really, really miss him. When I look at this team and how they project to next year, I don't know where he fits, which isn't he's going to fit. I think they want him in the lineup. I just don't know what that looks like with, you know, the possibility of Texier coming back, with, you know, some new blood coming in, with new players coming up that are going to make an impact. So it'll be interesting to see how he fits. He wants to play again this year, which is noble. It keeps getting pushed a little bit, but he was just cleared for contact a couple days ago. I think you're going to see him before the season's up. And I think he thinks it's really important for him to play because we're having this conversation. I think he wants to leave in people's mind what his game looks like when they start making decisions this summer too. I think that's really, really important to him. So good question, Chad. And thanks for it. I appreciate that. Thanks everybody for listening. We went a full hour today. I didn't think we were going to go that far. Really appreciate you guys. We'll be back again next week. Only a couple more weeks to go in the regular season. We'll keep doing these for a couple weeks after the season ends, as long as we've got stuff to talk about. And geez, I suppose in May we'll have some stuff to talk about for sure. So we'll keep doing them into the summer. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being with us. Have a great day today, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care.